So after wishing everyone a Shavuot Tov, we begin, thank you, we begin today the sixth perek of Masechta Shabbos, and that's the perek called Bameh Isha Yotza. It's in a certain sense very similar and an extension of the previous perek, because we're dealing with what animals are allowed to go out with. And now we turn to what people are going to allowed to go out with and not allowed to go out with. Bameh Isha Yotza Ubameh Eina Yotza. What can she wear that are accessories that are attached to her body? We'll speak about different things that she would cover her hair with, and jewels and the like. And the question is whether she's allowed to go out to Rishus HaRabim with these different kinds of pieces of jewelry, ornaments, accessories. As far as carrying things in our hand, that goes without saying. That's a violation of Hotzah D'oraisa. But we're talking about something which, even in the worst case scenario, would not be a violation of Hotzah D'oraisa, because she's not carrying it, but yet she might come to carry it. If she wears something, and let's say it might fall off, or she might take it off, and then inadvertently she might carry it in Rishus HaRabim, Dalet Amos. And she doesn't even remember that she's not allowed to do this. Now, if something is, for one reason or another, we can assume she would not take it off, or if something, LaMoshel, is very loose on her body, it's not tied and fastened tightly, if it's valueless, then we don't assume that she's going, if it falls off and it's just around, she's going to carry it home. It's rubbish. But if it's got value, and it might fall off, or alternatively, if it's got value and beauty, and she may want to show it off to a friend, and then once she takes it off, we're afraid she might carry it in Rishus HaRabim. So the subject of our Mishnah, and basically the entire Perek, are the Derabbanans, meaning the rabbinic gzeros that were instituted in order to make sure that a woman would not go out. Now, as you learn this Perek, you probably feel the same way I felt. We've never heard of these things. How come this Perek, you know, is not up on our radar screen? Who ever heard, for example, that a woman's not allowed to wear a pin on Shabbos publicly? And probably the reason we're not familiar with this is because we don't have a Rishus HaRabim, and even if we do have a Rishus HaRabim, we're used to what's called an Eruv. And if there's an Eruv, then even in the worst case scenario, if she'll take it off to show it to a friend and she'll carry it, then she's got an Eruv there. So I'm not telling you that all these halachas are not going to be found in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not going to tell you that they're not relevant. But it's kind of rare. If you end up in Europe or somewhere where there's no Eruv, then there is room to be machmir, to be careful about these Isurim. So the Mishnah begins by enumerating those things that a woman should not wear in Rishus HaRabim, again without an Eruv. Number one, lo teitze isha, lo b'chute tsemer, lo b'chute pishton, v'lo b'rtsuasha b'rosha. So the first paragraph of the Mishnah addresses three different types of strands or straps that she wears around her head. We could call it headbands, if you will. One headband is made of wool, another is made of flax. Wool is considered more soft. Flax is considered a harder substance, and we'll see why that's relevant. And then we have different kinds of straps that she puts around her head. And all these are prohibited. And there are two different factors that override here to generate this Isur. Number one, we're talking about something that has a certain beauty to it and value to it. And number two, we're talking about something that she might take off her head. as opposed to something that covers her hair, which we'll see later, if she would take it off to show some sort of beautiful hat that she's wearing to a friend, she would thereby be exposing her hair, which she wouldn't do in public. So in that case, it's okay. But we're talking about things where she would not expose her head, because these are things that are attached on top, either on her forehead or on top of her hat, different kinds of woolen strands, linen strands, and other kinds of straps that she wears around her head. Now the Mishnah seems to take a digression, and the Gemara is going to wonder about why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi would have placed the following laws, as we'll see here in the Mishnah Shabbos, which don't seem to be relevant to Shabbos. They belong to another Masechta called Mikvos. V'lo titbol bahem ad shetirapem. These various kinds of hairbands are very, very tight on the head, and if she were to go to mikvah, and it's crucial that the mikvah water touch directly her hair, she would have to loosen these various strands and bands, because otherwise the water would not get in to touch the hair. And again, that statement, as I said before, seems to be appropriate for Masechta Mikvos rather than Masechta Shabbos. But as we'll soon see, it's absolutely critical to Masechta Shabbos. Now we finished with the first section of the Mishnah. Now we go on to the second. V'lo b'totefes, v'lo b'sarvitin. Amongst the things that she's not allowed to wear in Rishus HaRabim are different kinds of frontlets, which we'll get into in Mirtz Shem and the Gemara, what the difference is. Totefes is something that's worn a little bit lower down, sarvitin a little bit higher up. Bizman she'enom tfurim. These are cases where they are loosely tied to her body. But if, by implication, she would tie them down to her body, she would sew them. For example, these are appendages to the hat. These are head bangles that are attached to the hat. And since she's not going to take off her hat, and since these are attached or sewn into her hat, by implication, then they won't fall off. And if they're not going to fall off, and she's not going to take them off, because if she would take them off, she would take them off with her hat, and that she won't do, therefore that's mutter. But if it's enom tfurim, if on the other hand it's not tied down, it's loose, then she may indeed take it off her hat, because it's not sewn onto her hat. V'lo b'kavul l'rishus harabim. Kavul is another type of a cap, and it's made of wool, and we'll see exactly why she's not allowed to wear that. V'lo b'ir shel zahav. This is the famous, if you heard of Shemer, she sings a song called Yerushalayim shel zahav, and it comes from this Mishnah. And the Gemara is going to explain that Rabbi Akiva had this very special jewel, this pin, that was made for his wife, and it was in the shape of Yerushalayim. That's called Yerushalayim shel zahav, the golden city. And that shouldn't be worn in a public domain, because once again, it's very beautiful, and she may be very tempted to take it off and show it to her friend, and before she puts it back on, she might carry it in Rishus HaRabim. V'lo b'katla, that's an interesting word. Katla in Aramaic comes from the word death or murder, and this is what we call in English a choker, that really chokes you, and that's why the word katla is used here. And in this case, since she would have to loosen it in order to breathe a little bit, then we're going to prohibit it. It's not really attached to her body. Veloben is zomim. Now here we have a distinction. The Mishnah is talking about nose rings. The implication is that earrings are okay. Apparently earrings are much more complicated to take off, or perhaps the hat covers the ears, the point in which the earrings are attached to the ear. And since she won't take off the hat, she won't take off her earrings. So the good news is that a woman is allowed to wear earrings in a public domain on Shabbos.
Rabbi, I'm sorry to interrupt. We should be on Nun Ches tonight. Did you know that?
Oh, we're already up to Nun Ches?
Yeah.
So now that we've learned those parts of the Mishnah that are relevant, let's get to the daf for today. We'll take a look on Nun Zayin Amud Beis, Tanur Rabbanan. That's two lines up before the bottom of the Amud. And here the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa says the following: Shlosha Dvarim Nemru Be'itztama. Okay, three things were said about something called an Itztama. The Gemara previously had established that an Itztama is something called Bizyoni, which really clarifies it for us. So the Gemara says, what is Bizyoni? And the Gemara says, it's Kalya Pruche. Now, in the old days, they used to wear a cape or a scarf that used to wrap around the neck, and they also wore something, also like a kind of a scarf, underneath their hat. And the reason why they did so is because sometimes the hat would not cover all the hairs, and there were stray hairs that were moving this way and that way. So they added a certain kind of a covering, a cloth covering over those stray hairs. And the Gemara says that with regard to this kind of a scarf, there are three dinim. The first din is Ein Bahem Mishum Kilayim, that if there was a mixture of both wool and flax and linen in this scarf, this is not a violation of Kilayim. We'll see later on, because the stitching was very loose. It was loose stitching. The Eino Metama B'Negoyim, and there's no Tumas Negoyim, which means that with regard to Tumas Negoyim, once again, we need a garment that has fibers that are, shall we say, sewn together in a very prominent way. And Ein Yotzin Behen L'Rishus HaRab, and she's not allowed to wear this out in Rishus HaRab. And we'll see why. Mishum Rabbi Shimon Amru, and here we're going to turn to Daf Nun Ches, Af Ein Bohem Mishum Atoros Kalos. Okay, now back at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they would wear certain beautiful garments for the Kala. They prepared them especially for the Kala, and that was part of the great expression of Simcha. But once the Mikdash was destroyed, there were many different takanos in the Gemara in Gittin and elsewhere that were prohibited because of the mourning. And there were certain kinds of beautiful atarot, otherwise known as crowns, that were prepared specifically for weddings, and those were prohibited. And this Braisa teaches us that Istama is not included in that enactment. And the reason for this is because Istama is made of fabric, loosely sewn together, but it's not made of metal. And this beautiful crown that was prohibited at the time, from the time of the Churban on, was made of metal. Okay, fine. That's what we see in the Braisa. Shmuel Omar Kavla di Avda Tnan. When the Mishnah says, let's go back to the Mishnah for just a second. The Mishnah says that there's something called a Kavla, correct? What was the language of the Mishnah was Veloba Kavul. And we said that a Kavul is something that's tied down to her calf. Shmuel says that Kavla is something entirely different. What is Kavla? Kavla, when a person was an Adon, meaning he possessed an Eved, and he wanted to make sure that people out there knew that this was his Eved, so he would put an identification mark on the Eved. And in the case of a Shivcha, on the Shivcha. And this was an emblem. And in this case, Shmuel says that you're allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRabim. And the reason for that is because an Eved realizes that if he were to take off this emblem that identifies him as an Eved, that would be almost like, if I can use an extreme term, an act of rebellion of sorts. So therefore we have no fear that he might take this off. So the Gemara asks, Umi Amar Shmuel Hachi? Is this going to be reconciled with another statement of Shmuel? Ha'amar Shmuel, Yotze Ha'eved B'chosam Shebet Tzavara, V'lo B'chosam Shebet Ksuso. This kavla was an emblem that he wore on his clothing if he was a male Eved. And Shmuel himself was committed to the position that although we will allow an emblem that's tied around his neck, but something that is attached to his clothing, that's prohibited. In other words, Shmuel says we're not afraid that he might remove an emblem that's tied around his neck, but we are afraid that he might remove an emblem that's attached to his clothing. So how could Shmuel say that Kavla is mutter? Lo kasha. There's no contradiction. Hadi Ovid le Rabbe, Hadi Ovid iu lenafshe. Sometimes the slave was required by his master to wear an emblem. And in such a case, Shmuel says, we're not afraid he'll remove it. As we said before, the Adon would be very machpid about that. How could you do such a thing? But Hadi Ovid, if the slave on his own initiative added an emblem because he wanted to identify himself as the slave of the master, then the master himself is much more flexible, and once again we're afraid that the Eved might decide to take it off and therefore he's not allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRab. So the Gemara immediately asks, B'mayu kimto lohad Shmuel? You're telling me that when Shmuel allowed the slave to carry this emblem, Shusarab the Ovid Le Rabbi, it was made by his Rebbe, and therefore his Adon, his Rab, and therefore he would never dream of taking it off. Is Bechosam Shebeksuso Amaylo? And if it was a requirement of the master, then what difference does it make whether it's around his neck or whether it's attached to his body? To his clothing. Like we have, you know, different people that wear flags. You know, I've seen, you know, people wear a pin with the Canadian flag together with the Israeli flag, American flag, British, I don't know, whatever. So maybe he'll, he would not even dream of removing this. So why have a lo b'chosam shebeksuso? And the Gemara answers, Dilma Mifsak. What we're afraid is that it might get loose and it might fall off. And if this be the case, since it's an emblem that was granted to him by his Rav, and he attaches it to his clothing, if it falls off, he's going to be very nervous about it. He's going to want to take it back to his house and show the master that he's going to put it back on. But with regard to something that's around his neck, then we're not afraid that it'll fall off. So the Gemara says, "Umir sasu mikpale." What's going to happen if this emblem on his clothing would fall off? He'll be frightened, mirsas, over his adon, and he'll fold it over, umaches le akatfe, and he might place it over his shoulder. So apparently, this emblem was attached to some sort of a scarf or an attachment that he might wrap around his shoulder. Kidei Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, Tomer Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hayotze betalis mekupeles unachas lo al ktefav b'shabes chayv chatos. Now you might think that if you fold up a garment and you carry it over your shoulder, that's not called Derech Otzah, but Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef tells us, in the name of Rav Yochanan, that in fact, you would be Chayav Achatos in this case, where you might fold it over your shoulder. So, according to Shmuel, We're not afraid that he's going to deliberately remove an emblem because it was made and required by his Adon, but nevertheless, if the emblem is attached to clothing, then what might happen is that he might actually, in case it gets loose or something like that, he might actually attach it to a piece of clothing and carry it back to his Adon. V'chihadi amr le Shmuel l'Rav Chanina, Rav Chanina bar Shilo, and we have a similar statement of Shmuel, who says, Kulu Rabbonon de Beresh Kalusa lo lifku besarbole chasime. At the time of the Resh Kalusa, the exilarch, there was a special emblem for those who belonged, they were officers in what's called the Bay Resh Kalusa, the house of the Resh Kalusa. And Shmuel instructed them they should not go out with these kinds of attachments to their begadim, to their cloaks. And that was prohibited in Rishus HaRabim, because if the emblem would get detached, they might fold over their cloak. Now again, I'm not sure when the Gemara says fold over their cloak and wear it over the shoulder, I'm not sure exactly why. One possibility is that the emblem would attach easily to this clothing, but another possibility, and that's what Rashi develops here, is that they may be embarrassed that the emblem fall off, certainly in the case of an Eved when his Adon made him this emblem, but even in the case of the Beresh Galusa, since they were required to wear this emblem, therefore, if it fell off, they didn't want anyone to notice that the emblem wasn't there. So what they would do is they would take a piece of clothing, fold it over, and cover it over their shoulder, covering the chest where they would normally be wearing the emblem. So we see that Shmuel, in his logic about an emblem, he's worried about the fact that it might fall off. And if he wears it out in Rosh Hashanah, if the emblem falls off, and he's concerned about that because it looks like he's not wearing the emblem, so he will cover that area so that no one will realize that he's not wearing the emblem. Once he covers it with a kind of a cloak, then he is guilty of carrying in Rosh Hashanah. Gufa, we go back to Shmuel. Omar Shmuel Yotze Eved Bechosom Shibitzavarav Alo Bechosem Shebek Suso. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a brisa to support Shmuel to make that same distinction. Yotze Eved Bechosom Shibitzavaro. If he has an emblem that's attached to his neck, and apparently it was like almost like a collar, then we're not afraid that it might fall off and it'll carry it. But if it's attached to his clothing, then we have to be concerned that it might fall off and he might want to cover it with another beged. Ureminu, what about the following brisa that seems to contradict? It says, Lo yetzei ha'eved b'chosam shebetzavara. The brisa seems to be machmir, even in the case of an emblem that is attached to his neck. And certainly not to an emblem which is on his clothing. That we've already discussed. But here the Braisa seems to assume that even a chosam b'tzavaro is prohibited. In both cases, the emblem is not considered a kli. It's not a garment that protects the body or warms the body. It's not an ornament in the sense that it's a beautiful takshit. And therefore, It doesn't categorize itself under any type of kli, and therefore it's not makabel tumah. Now, what about a bell? The lo bizug shebetzavaro. When they had a bell that was tied around the neck of a slave, that's also something that might fall off, and the eved might carry it back to Rishus HaRabim, so that's prohibited. Aval Yotzi Bezug Shebek Suso. But if he has a bell that's attached to his clothing, then we're not afraid that it might fall off. And he wouldn't take it off for sure, because that would be sort of an act of rebellion. But once the bell is attached to his garment, then it becomes a takshit. It becomes an ornament that beautifies his garment. Because the Adon would make this beautiful bell. Again, when we say that in the case of a bell that he's allowed to go out if it's attached to his garment, that's only if a bell doesn't make any musical noise. And as they stuff up that piece there. V'lo seitze behema lo b'chosem shebetzavara v'lo b'chosem shebeksusa. Although a human being could have a takshit, and that would be mutar on Shabbos, like the case of a zug shebeksuso, in the case of an animal, it matters not whether this extra piece, this emblem, that might identify the animal as belonging to so-and-so, is attached to its neck or it's attached to a piece of clothing that's wrapped around the animal's body. In both cases, there's no such thing as a takshit for an animal. Anything that an animal is allowed to wear in Rishus HaRab, it's because it's a beged, but this is not a beged, this emblem. V'lo b'zug shel ksuso, v'lo b'zug shel tzavoro, and also the bell, which again is some sort of identification, but it's not a beged that protects the body, that's prohibited because, as we discussed at great length in the previous paragraph, an animal is not allowed to carry things, a masa, in Rishus HaRab on Shabbos, because l'man yonuach. And this would be like a masa. The animal is carrying something that is not there to protect its body. And even though it might be ornamental, and you and I know that in contemporary life, people put all sorts of beautiful things around animals, that's not prohibited, again, in a place where there's no Rishus HaRab. There's no Erev in Rishus HaRab. V'zeh v'zeh ein mekablim tumah. And with regards to these emblems or these bells, since they're not begadim, and they don't have a din of a takshit, therefore they don't have a status as a kli, and they would not be makabel tuma. Now, having learnt this braisa, let's ask ourselves, why is this braisa brought down here? What's its relevance? And the answer is, we go back to the reish of the braisa, and the reish of the braisa says that not only is an eved prohibited from going out to Rishus HaRab with an emblem that's attached to its body, but even an emblem that's around its neck. And Shmuel was Mekil in that case. So Gemara answers, maybe we can answer, Lema Hadi Diavid Le Rabbe, and Hadi Avid Le Yula Nafshe. Let's use that old distinction that we had before in reconciling Shmuel, and we said that Shmuel is only strict in the case where the emblem was made by his Adon, and therefore he's required to wear it, and if it falls off, he's going to be embarrassed about that, and he might carry. But if the Evan on his own initiative made this emblem, then it's permissible. So maybe this Brisa, which is now being strict about the emblem, is talking about a case of the Ovid Le Rabbi. This was an emblem that was created by and required to be worn by the Eved, but it's created by the master. Lo. So Gemara says, let's find a different answer, a simpler answer. Idi v'idi d'ovid le rabbe. In other words, the Braisa is talking about a case where this emblem was made by the master. The Braisa sometimes says that we have to be machmir. So it all depends on the following. Kan b'shel mateches, v'kan b'shel tit. What does that mean? Is the emblem, this little pin that he wears to identify, is it worth something? Does it have a significant market value? If it's made out of steel, iron, or any other metal, then you can bet your bottom dollar that if, in event, it would fall off, the Eved would definitely want to carry it back, because the Adon is going to be very upset if it's lost. But if it's made of clay, so that's inexpensive. And even if he wouldn't bring it back, let's say if it fell off, or even if it would break and shatter, his Adon wouldn't blink about it. So even though it was made by his Adon, but it was made out of cheap pottery, and therefore he'll just leave it there. He'll get another one. Ukir Rav Nachman Omer Rabar Vua. Dover Makpid Olav Rabo Ein Yotzin Bo. Dover Shein Makpid Olav Yotzin Bo. If you have an expensive item, an emblem that was made by the master out of metal, then the master expects the Eved to bring it back. You know, don't lose it. It's something of value. It's hard to replace. But if, on the other hand, it's something that the Adon couldn't care less about, it's so inexpensive, it's a cheap piece of clay that was fastened, that was fashioned for the Adon, for the Eved, then we're not afraid that if it becomes detached, the Eved is going to bring it back to his master and violate the Isur Shabbos, because his master doesn't care even if it got lost. But if you're talking about a slave that is wearing an emblem that's made of metal, that's a different story. Then there's kapeda, and therefore the slave will either carry it home, or as we said before, he'll even cover over his shoulder. All this will be a violation of Shabbos. Hochinam mistabra, the Gemara accepts the second explanation. And why is that? Mitani, because the Brisa says, Zevezeh ein mekablim tumah. Both of them are not makabel tuma, whether or not the emblem is made of a material like this or like that. If you're talking about something, an emblem that's made of a metal substance, hani hu delo makabli tuma, hakelim did hu makabli tuma. The Mishnah is pointing out that there's no kabbalah, the Bryce I should say, that there's no kabbalah tuma, because it's an emblem. Had the same thing been not an emblem, but it would have been an absolute kli, then it would be makabel tuma, and that's because it's made of metal. Ela e amit b'shel tith. If it's made of clay, that's called what's called a kli cheres, and a kli cheres is only makabel tuma if it has a base kibble. You're telling me because he made this clay into an emblem, therefore it's not susceptible to tumah. But other kalim that were made of the same material and were not made as fashioned as an emblem, but they would function, then it would be makabel tumah. Vatanya, we have a brisa that says clay avonim, clay glolim, clay adoma. That's the one we're interested in. Klei Adoma, ein mekablim tuma, lo mi divrei sofrim, lo mi divrei Torah, lo mi divrei sofrim. So it's very interesting. The Brisa had to tell me that there's no kabbalas tuma over here. And why? Because it's an emblem. Forget about the fact that it's an emblem. The very fact that it's made from Adoma, it's pottery, it's earthenware, that's called Kli Cheres, is then Kli Cheres is not significant enough to be makabel tuma. And therefore, why would the Braisa tell me, in the case of Kli Cheres, that since he made it into an emblem, it's not makabel tuma? It must be that the Braisa is talking about a case of an emblem that was made of metal. And once we know that, then we could say that that's the reason why there's an Isur Yetziyah B'Shabbos, because the Baal, the Adon, made this emblem out of metal. It's expensive, and he expects the Eved to come back with the metal. And if it fell off, the Eved might get very nervous and overwhelmed by fear, and therefore he might carry it back into Rishus HaRavim. So let's just give a little bit of an overview of what we discussed about emblems worn by slaves. And it comes out that these are the following principles. Number one, if it's made of metal, then you're never allowed to wear it on Shabbos at Rosh Hashanah, because if, heaven forbid, this metal emblem will fall off, then the Eved is tempted to bring it home, to carry it home. On the other hand, if it's made of clay, then it depends. If it was fashioned by the master, then he can wear it around the neck, because he doesn't want to remove it. that would be an act of rebellion. And if, and on the other hand, it falls off, he's not going to take it back to Rishus, to the Rishus of the Adon, because it's clay, and the Adon couldn't care less about replacing it. Omar Mar, we learned in the Vrais of Alo Zug Shebet Zavaro, that the slave, even if he's adorned by a bell around his neck, he's not allowed to wear that in Rishus HaRabim. Aval Yotzehu, the Bryce insists that we can be more lenient in the case of a Zug Shebek Suso, if the bell is attached to his clothing. So the Gemara wants to try to justify this distinction between Zug Shebek Tzavara and Zug Shebek Suso. Zug Shebek Tzavara, my low. Why don't we allow him to go out with a bell that's around his neck? Dilma mifsik v'yosalasuya. It might get detached, and therefore he'll carry it back to Rishus HaRabim, violate Hotzah. Is Zug Shebek Suso Nami? Why shouldn't the Braisa be consistent and apply this stringency even to the case of a bell that's attached to his clothing? Lechush Dilma mifsik v'yosalasuya. Maybe he'll get detached, and he'll carry it back into Rishus HaYochid. And the Gemara answers, Hochamai Askina de Micha be Mumcha. We're talking about a case where the bell was sewn down to the clothing. If it's sewn down to the clothing, that permanent attachment will comfort me and calm me down that it's not going to get detached. Ukir Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, the Omer Rav Huna Bered Yeshua, call Shu Arug Lo Gazru. Anything that's woven into a beged is not included in this gzera. And the reason for that is because we don't have to worry that it might get detached. Now, this has to do with what we started the Shia today with the Mishnah back at the beginning of the Perek. You remember that the Mishnah went off on what seemed to be a tangent that was irrelevant and belonged to a different Masecht about whether or not these things have to be loosened in order to allow the water to go in when she goes to mikvah. And here, we're talking about something that is attached. It's sewn on. And we had a similar idea with regard to an Isha that if she has certain garments that are very, very tight, or attachments to a garment that's very attached, that's fastened in a very permanent way, then we don't have to be afraid that it might fall off. Omar Mar, lo teitze behema, an animal is not allowed to go out in Rishus HaRabim, lo b'chosim shebet tzavar, v'lo b'chosim shebet susa, v'lo b'zug shebet tzavar, v'lo b'zug shebet susa, v'zeh v'zeh, ein mekablim tuma. So he said that with regard to emblems, an animal is not allowed to go out with an emblem. It doesn't matter if it's around its neck, whether it's on it, it's attached to a piece of clothing around the body of the Eved. No bells can be attached to the Eved. To the behemoth, whether it be a bell that's attached to its neck or a bell attached to its clothing. V'zevizein mekablim tuma, because there's no kabbalas tuma in the case of something that's not a kli. And in order for this bell to be a kli, if it's not functional musically, because they stuffed it up, and it's not an ornament, because an animal doesn't get an ornament, and it's not a garment, because it doesn't warm up the animal's body, therefore, it's not a kli. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. V'zug shebehemei mekablin tumer minu. We have a brisa that contradicts this as far as tuma. Zug shel behema tmeya. If you have the bell of an animal, then tmeya means that it is makabel tuma. And here we turn to Daf Nun Ches Amid Beis. Bishel deles tahora. The bell that's attached to a door, in order that you ring the bell if you want to notify somebody that you want to come in, that is not makabel tuma. So what's the difference now between the resha, which is the case of a bell that's attached to an animal, and there we said in this new brisa that it is makabel tuma, and the bell that's attached to a door, why isn't that makabel tuma? And the answer is, yeah?
What's the purpose of a zug on an animal if it's stuffed up and it's not an considered an ornament?
Well, there are two answers to your question. One answer to your question is it's an ornament, but it's not halachically an ornament. You know, he wants to beautify his animal. And the second answer is that he wants to take it out to the marketplace. And he wants to beautify it for sale purposes, so he spiffs it up by putting a bell around it. But al-pi-din, the concept of a tachshit, is only applicable to an ornament for a human being, not an ornament for an animal. And moreover, in this case, since it looks like he's taking the animal out to the market, as we discussed a few days ago, that's something that we want to avoid. We want people to suspect him of taking it out to the market. But let me get back for a moment to the case of a zug shebedelis. You have a bell that's attached to a door, and it's not makabel tumah. So this has to do with another principle in Kabbalah's Tumah, which is called Mechubar LaKarka. Anything that's attached to the ground is not a kli, and it's not Mechubar, and it's Mechubar LaKarka. It's not susceptible to Tumah. So insofar as this bell is attached to the door itself is part of the structure that's obviously attached to the ground, therefore it's not Mechubar Tumah. Now, what happens if he changes the designation of the object? For example, there was a zug that was used as a bell for a door, and now he wants to attach it to an animal. In its original form, it was not makabel tumah. But now that he attaches it to an animal, it would be makabel tumah. So what is the primary determining factor? Do we say that we look at its original manufacture, in other words, the purpose for which it was created, and its original purpose was as a door, for a door, and we said for a door it's not makabel tumah, or do we look at its current usage, and right now it's being used for a behemoth? And the Brisa says Tmeya, that basically as soon as he changes the function or the what's called the Yud means the designation, then as far as Tumah Vitara, it changes the din. And now that you put it around the neck of the animal, it now becomes susceptible to Tumah. Again, even though he didn't make any physical change in the bell, but it doesn't matter. Once he reassigns the function of the bell, that's enough for it to be makabel tumah. And we'll see that that's not so simple. Shel behema vaso ledeles. What about the reverse situation? He had a zug that was designated for an animal, and it therefore is makabel tumah. And now he reassigns its purpose, takes it off the animal, and puts it on his door. So you and I would say, well, now it's not makabel tumah because he reassigned it. So the Braisa says, no. Af al pi shechibro ledeles ukvo b'masmerim. Even though he attaches this bell to the door in a very permanent way, nevertheless, Tomei, the original tumah that was contracted in stage number one when the bell was designated for the animal remains in its place. Why? Shekol akelim yordim lidei tumasam b'machshava v'ein olim lidei tumasam ela b'shinu maisa. We have two principles here. Two sides of a coin. The first principle is that if you have something that's not makabel tumah, as soon as you decide, and that's called machshava, that it's now going to be reassigned, and in its second designation it's now susceptible to tumah, then it is makabel tumah henceforth. And that's called b'machshava. Now you might ask me, what do you mean b'machshava? He took the bell off the door, and he attached it to the animal. why do you call that machshava? And the answer is because the bell is the bell is the bell. Even though you moved it from one place to the other, but you didn't change it physically. And that's called a machshava. And the chiddush here is that even though you didn't change it physically, but now that you designate it for a purpose that makes it susceptible to kabbal tumah, that's what's going to be, in fact. It's going to be makabal tumah. But let's go in the reverse order. You have something that was makabal tumah, and now you want to change its designation in a way that the tumah should be parcha ba'avir. It should be removed. It should fly into the air. Then you need what's called a shinui maisa. You have to have a physical change. It's not enough to take the bell off the neck, off around the neck of the animal and put it on the door. You have to make a change in the animal, in the bell. You have to hammer it in such a way that the bell doesn't look like it looks like it was originally. So now let's go back to ask ourselves why the Gemara quoted this brisa. We see clearly from this brisa that the bell of an animal is mekabel tumah. And that's against everything we said until now. We said that a bell of an animal is not mekabel tumah. That was the first brisa. And the reason for that was, and we saw it over and over again, is because there's no such thing as a tachshit or a beged with regard to an animal. So the Gemara answer is lo kasha. Ha de isle inbal, ha de lesle inbal. I always wondered the name of that hotel. In any event, an inbal is called in English a clapper. You know, it's that piece that you see inside the bell that moves back and forth, and when it claps from side to side, it makes music. Now, when the Brisa is discussing a bell that has a clapper, that has the status of a kli, because it's a musical instrument. If you've ever seen the cows there on the in Switzerland on the mountains, you know, you hear the beautiful chimes of the bells. But when we discussed a case of a bell around the animal, and we said that it's not an ornament and it's not a kli, that's because it has no inbal. They removed the clapper. So does a bell have a function? It depends. If you want to call it a kli for Kabbalah's tumah, if it has the inbal, then it is a full-fledged kli, and it's makabal tumah. But if it has no clapper, then if you attach it to an animal, that's not enough to consider it as a kli, and it's not makabal tumah. So Gemara is not happy with this. Manafshach. Imanahu afal pi de lesle inbal. The Gemara thinks that if a bell is considered a kli and it's makabel tumah, the Gemara thinks that's because it has the status of a tachshit. And a tachshit is a kli and it's makabel tumah. And therefore, the Gemara thinks that there, even if you remove the clapper, then it still remains an ornament. Ilav manahu, if on the other hand you're not willing to call it a kli, then inbal mashvile mana. The Gemara asks a rhetorical question: would the musical element make it into a kli? And the Gemara answers: in, yes, that's exactly what we're saying. Kirab Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yonah son, Tiyom Rab Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yonah son. That's a classic. Tradition, if you remember the Gemara, the Agadah that we did the other day, it was all Rab Shmuel bar Nachmani in the name of Rab Yonasan. Minayin lemashmiya kol beklima techashu tomet. We have a pasuk that tells us that if you have a metal utensil and it's called a utensil because it's mashmiya kol, simply because of the musical sounds that it produces, it's mekabel tumah. Shenemar, because we go into the parasha of Kabbalah's Tumah at the end of Bamidbar, when we're talking about Melchemes Midjan and all the Kalim that they took as booty, and the Torah says they were all Tameh, it says they're called Davar Asher Yavo Ba'esh Taviru Ba'esh. Vitayar is the next word in the Pasuk. So it there's an extra word here. It says called Davar. It could have said Kol Asher Yavo Ba'esh Tavir Ba'esh. Anything that passes through fire in order to purify it for our use, it has to pass through fire. This is a source for what's called limun. And why does it say called davar? The extra word davar is afilu dibur yovo be'esh. In other words, davar should be read as dibur. Davar is an allusion to something that produces a sound. And because it produces a sound, that makes it into a kli, and it's mekabel tuma, which means that now we go back to the bell, and we have to answer one question. Does the bell produce a sound, or does it not? And the answer is, it depends whether it has an inbal. So b'mayu kimta, so now we know that the brisa is b'lesle inbal. It's talking about a case where the bell was removed, the clapper was removed from the bell, is ema mitziyasa. Now we have a trouble with the brisa in its middle case, when we're talking about bells that were worn by the slave. The lo besug shebetzavaro, the eved is not allowed to go out mishus arabim with the bell that's around its neck. Aval yotzeu besug shebeksuso, it can go out with a bell that's on its clothing. And that's what we discussed about before, that in terms of Shabbos, we're not worried that it might fall off because it's tied down in a very permanent way. But v'zeh v'zeh mekablim tumah. Then it doesn't matter whether this bell is around his neck or it's on his attached to his clothing, it's always going to be mekabel tumah. Well, wait a second. We just said that the Raisa is talking about a case where there's no clapper. So what does it mean, zeh v'zeh mekabel tumah? What makes it into a kli to be makabel tuma? Either lesle inbal, if it doesn't have a clapper, mi makabel tuma. Right? Why would it be susceptible to tuma? And you know, it's interesting that the Gemara now is assuming that if you attach a bell to an animal and you attach a bell to a slave, in both cases, It's not considered a kli. It doesn't really function as a garment. And if it has a clapper, then it should be makabel tumah under la locha of producing music, which we derive from the word davar. Ureminu, we have another braisa that says ose zagin lemachteshes vilarisa ulemitpachos sfaramitpachos tinokos. We have all sorts of bells over here that are listed in this brisa. We have a bell that's for a purpose of a machteshes. Machteshes is a utensil that's used to grind. And somehow, don't ask me to explain the physics of it, but the musical sound of this machteshes, if it's got a bell attached to it, is going to enhance the taste of the food. And arisa is, you know, some lullaby music for the child. So they attach a bell to the cradle of a baby. And they used to attach bells to Sifrei Torah, to the mantle of a Sifrei Torah, mitpachos. And also they had certain begadim that they dressed up the children in. And those garments would also be enhanced by bells. So now we want to know whether or not these bells are makabel tuma. And the rule is as follows. Yesh b'lahem inbal tmeim. If they are musical, they produce music, then they are makabel tuma. Ein b'lahem inbal, if they don't have that clapper, it's been removed, is tahorit. Ein b'lahem inbal tahorit. Nitlu in b'lahem. Maybe when they were worn originally, they had a clapper, and then the clapper was removed. Is then we go back to the principle that we learned before, that we said the kol hakelim yordin tapes of the ein olim midei tumasim el b'shinui is adain tumasim aleim. He made no change in the bell, and if he made no change in the bell, then the tumah that the bell was received when it was equipped with the potential to produce music, that tumah remains. But we see clearly from this brisa that if this bell never had a clapper to it, then it's not makabel tuma. And we said in the middle case of the Brisa that we're talking about something which was not equipped with a, right? It said lo bezug shevsotzvila and zevzem makabelim tuma. And the impression we got was that the case in the Brisa was a case where the clapper was there and yet it was removed. So the question is now, this last Brisa seems to tell me that only in a case where there was never a clapper that was attached to the bell, then it's mufka from tuma, it doesn't get tuma. But when we go back to the middle case of the Brisa, there we seem to think that it depends on whether it was removed or not removed. So the Gemara answers, Hani mili betinok. When the Brisa says that bells are attached to the clothing of children, de lekola avdilei, there's a very definite function here, because he wants to be aware of where the children are, where the baby is, so he wants to hear the noise. And therefore, if you remove the clapper, then it loses its shame kli. It's not functional anymore. It doesn't give you anything. Avol gadol, but in the case of a person who wears a bell, which is discussed in the first Brisa, there you and I know that even without the bell, is takshinule. When I mean to say without a bell, I mean without the inbal of the bell, it's still considered a takshit. Afal gav, delespe inbal, even though he may have removed the clapper, but it still has the status of a bell and a takshit. Omar Mar Nitlo in the Lehem, a dying to Mosam al Lehem. If you remove the clapper, then it still remains Tome. Lamai Chazi. Well, what are you going to use it for? Once you remove its clapper, it has no function. Omar Abaye, Holva Hejot Yochalach Zero. Because it's very easy to return and reattach the clapper. You don't even need a professional for that. Masiv Rava. Rava tax Abaye. Is it true that anything that could be reattached without a professional is still Tame? Don't we have a Mishnah in Mesechta Olos? It says, Hazug Veha Inbar Chibur. That in the case of an inbal, it's called a chibur, which means that the clapper is treated as part of the bell. It's not considered a separate entity. So, for example, if one of the two, either the bell itself, the structure of the bell, or the clapper, comes in contact with an avatuma, then both become tome. That's called chibur. We've discussed this in the past, the concept of chibur. So if a clapper is considered a part of the bell, that's a chibur, then if it's removed, then the bell should lose its status as Kabbalah's tuma is concerned. Who cares whether it could be reattached through a non-professional? And if you're going to tell me that that's exactly what the Mishnah is saying, that the clapper is considered is afagav delo mechaber kemand mechaber dami, and if you're going to tell me that when it says chibur, it doesn't mean because the clapper is now in its present state attached to the bell, but it means because it could be attached to the bell or reattached to the bell by a non-professional. Varsanya, we have a brisa that says mispores shel prokim. They used to take different blades and attach them together to make a scissors out of it. The Ismael shel rehitni, and then they had a carpet that used to have a handle that was attached to a blade. Is chibur l'tuma, the ein chibur l'hazah. We're going to be machmir, and we're going to say that if one of these two elements came in contact with an avatuma, then they're both tamei. But if you want to be metayer them, which is called hazah, then you have to be metayer each one separately. The Amrinon, and when we interpreted this price, we said, Mimonavshach, I chiburu afilu azov, I lo chibur afilu tuma nami lo. Either they should be considered as one, and then they should be considered as one even as far as Tara is concerned. Or alternatively, they should be considered as two separate entities as far as Tumah is concerned. Yom Rabbah, Dvar Torah, Bishas Melocha, Chibur. When you're using them together, that's called a Chibur, Bein L'Tumah, Bein L'Azah. Shalom Bishas Melocha, when he's not using them and they are separate pieces, is Eino Chibur, Lo L'Tumah, V'Lo L'Azah. They're considered two separate entities. V'Gazra Al Tumah Shalom Bishas Melocha, Mishum Tumah Shehi Bishas Melocha. So they said that Midrabbanan, we're going to have to institute Tumah L'Chumra, even when it's not Bishas Melocha, because otherwise he might come to use it Bishas Melocha. Halazah shehi b'shas melacha, mishum azah shelo b'shas melacha. But on the other hand, in a case of shas melacha, where the Torah would say, as far as Tara is concerned, you could be entire one and both are tar, the Rabbanan are going to suspend that, because in a case of b'shas melacha, in a case of shelo b'shas melacha, each item would be separate and requires its own tefillah, its own Tara, its own Hazah. So therefore, Rabbi explains that the Braisa that states that these utensils are connected with respect to Tumah, but not respect to Hazah, that's because of the nature of this Gzeirah Rabbanan. But one thing is clear, that according to Rabbi, this Braisa maintains that utensils are treated as utensils with a Chibur only when they are connected. And it doesn't say anything about the fact that we could reconnect it by hiring a non-professional to do so. Elama Rava. And here's where we're going to end on the top of Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph. Hoil v'roi lahakisho al gabi cheres. That even when the clapper is removed from the bell could still produce musical sounds, even without its clapper. And what do you do with it? You give a bang on a pot, if it's a pottery, a piece of pottery made of earthenware, and it makes a beautiful sound. So the original function still remains even after you remove the clapper. And Itmar Nami, Om Rab Yossi, Rab Chanina, Hoel V'Roy LaHakish Al Gabi Cheres. Since you could take this bell and you could bang it on top of an earthenware pot, and it will produce a sound, that's why it retains its status as far as being susceptible for Kabbalah's tool. Tomorrow we'll start here on the top of Daf Nuntes Amidah. Just to summarize that last point, according to Rava, a bell that had a clapper once and then it was removed, it retains its status to be Makabal Tuma, or its status as it already was Makabal Tuma, as long as there's some function which is called Mi'ein Malachta Rishon, is similar to its original function. So the function of a bell is to produce music, and a bell, even without its clapper, could still produce music, and therefore its status vis-a-vis Tumah remains the same. We had a similar case with regard to a wooden utensil, and if it was punctured, there was a hole in it. If that hole was smaller than a pomegranate, in other words, a pomegranate would be retained by this receptacle, then the tumah status is clear, remains the same, because you could still store pomegranates in it. So it's still me'ein malachta rishona. Okay then? That's what I just wanted to add in light of your question.